You're listening to Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Welcome to Sleep Stories for Equestrians. I'm your host, Ashley Winch. We're so happy you're here to relax and unwind. If you fall asleep and miss the story, we will recap it at the beginning of the next episode. We've also selected and edited these stories for ultimate relaxation, removing any stressful bits without affecting the story's integrity, so you can focus on drifting off to sleep. With that, let's settle down and prepare for our story. The gates are closed. The horses sleep. The day's work done. The chores complete. Now let us rest, our bodies and minds. Drift off to sleep and close your eyes. It's time for us to turn down for the night. Now let's breathe in, breathe out, and turn off the light. One more time, breathe out, breathe in. Now, let us begin. On the last episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians, we joined the elf at her first horse show. Now we begin the next chapter, Folly and Her Masters. I am now going to introduce you to my friend, Folly. She is a beautiful mare, and as a very great contrast to myself, for while, you will remember, my coat is a rich bay color, Folly's is a handsome gray. So handsome indeed that Master has not yet been able to meet with another horse, to his mind, equal to pair her. She is very much admired by all visitors who come to the stables to see us. And being much older than I am, she is much wiser in worldly wisdom. Folly was not born on the estate and had lived in two other homes before Master bought her, and she so came to live with us. She had not been very happy in either of these homes, and when she first came to the park, she was very subdued and quiet, and her somewhat stately bearing and the haughty manner in which she tossed her head gave both my brother Aros and me the impression that Folly was undoubtedly proud. She was most unusually nervous, too, and sometimes seemed quite afraid of Ricketts when he approached her, though no groom could have been gentler and kinder than he always was to us. Folly would start and whinny timidly whenever Ricketts wanted to harness her to the light dog cart in which she was to take dear Master somewhere or other. After a time, Eros ventured to remonstrate with Folly for showing this fear of Ricketts, and he told her that she need never be afraid of our special attendant, or, indeed, of anyone at the park, for all the men employed by Master in the stables had to be really fond of animals, or he wouldn't have them to work for him. Folly turned her head and gazed thoughtfully first at Aros, then at me, and there was a very sad expression in her lovely eyes when she answered, "I am not really afraid of Ricketts, dear friends, and I will try to control my nervous fears. But this is the first home I have lived in where the approach of man has not meant rough treatment and often very hard work." I shuddered visibly and begged her to try to forget the past and to endeavor to make herself as happy as she could be with us, and we again assured her that she need have no fear of anyone at the park. If only I could forget the past, sighed Folly. She seemed in the mood to talk, so Eros and I prepared ourselves to listen, and she told us what I am now going to tell you, dear friends, about her early days. Folly was born in the county of Somersetshire, and her first master was a Mr. Jackson, a prosperous and well-to-do market gardener. The lord of the manor in the village where Mr. Jackson had built a large and very ugly villa had gotten into money difficulties, and Mr. Jackson, being rich, had paid him a very handsome price for Folly's mother when she was offered for sale. Some time after, Folly herself was born, and as you may imagine, she proved to be a very good horse indeed. Her small head was beautifully poised, and her legs were straight and slender. And at first, Mr. Jackson was very proud of her, and she was the envy of all his friends. Unfortunately, neither he nor the somewhat ignorant men he employed to work for him knew much about horses, especially one of Folly's breed and caliber, and the poor creature was not only put into harness much too soon, but she was broken in the usual rough-and-ready way, and her sensitive nature was quite hurt. Mr. Jackson and his men meant to master Folly, but they did not go the right way about it, and in the end Folly took things into her hands and ran away. It happened that one day there was to be a local flower show in a village about 7 miles distant from where Mr. Jackson lived, and he had been asked to judge the flowers and fruit. This honor, said Folly, gave the pompous old man great joy, and when the day came I was harnessed to the dog cart as usual, and Mr. and Mrs. Jackson and stiff old Thomas the groom all crowded into the front seat. Mrs. Jackson, who was very gaily dressed in a brilliant plaid skirt, plush mantle, and bonnet with the very straightest feather in it I have ever seen, wanted Thomas to take the back seat of the cart, saying it was more genteel and the place where the servant ought to sit. Really, I believe, said Folly, Mr. Jackson thought so too. But he always made a point of doing the exact opposite of what his wife wished, and he answered in a rude, gruff voice. Thomas will not sit in the back of the cart, Anne. We will all gather in the front and be warmer. The day was broiling, and they all squeezed together in front of the cart as Mr. Jackson had ordered. He drove, and his wife sat next to him, and the very straight feather in her bonnet kept tickling his face, making him very angry. He remonstrated with her about it several times, but she only told him that their neighbor, Mrs. Jenkins, who had quite lately been staying in London with her sister, had told her that straight feathers were the very height of fashion. Here, said Folly, I think Mrs. Jackson must have somehow edged nearer to Master and tormented him beyond endurance, for I heard a scream, and then a white thing flew past my eyes and lay in the middle of the road, some yards ahead of me. I have always been very much afraid of strange things I see or meet on the road, and when I saw that white thing lying in front of me, I began to slacken pace, and finally stood still. I simply dared not pass it. Oh, Josiah, I heard Mrs. Jackson say, we shall be late for judging. Not that I want to appear at the show now with my beautiful bonnet, which Mrs. Jenkins did say was the height of fashion, all spoiled by your nasty temper. "Do shut up about your bonnet, Anne." And Master stood up in the cart and willed me to go forward. Time was getting on, but I felt that no power on earth would make me go past that strange white moving object. How did I know that it wouldn't suddenly pounce upon me and do me some great harm? "What did you do in the end?" Eros and I asked simultaneously. I kicked and reared for a bit and backed away from the fearsome object as far as ever I could. And then I just whizzed suddenly around, flinging poor old Thomas into a ditch as I did so, and turned my back on the dreaded white thing, which had begun to move in a stealthy, evil way toward me, and I ran and ran and ran. I heard Mrs. Jackson scream and Master curse and swear, but I heeded them not, and I only came to a standstill when I was forcibly made to by a strong, firm grip on my bridle. Tired and exhausted, I awaited my fate. The boy who had stopped me patted me kindly and talked soothingly to me, but Master called me lots of cruel names and said he would teach me to run away. My young friend, whose name I afterwards learned was Don, tried to quieten Master and told him that I was such a beautiful horse that I was worth both patience and training. I had fled in the direction of the ugly villa, which we very soon reached home. Master just threw down my reins and shouted to a stable lad to go fetch Thomas, and then walked to the house. "Josiah, Josiah," called Mrs. Jackson, "come and hold this beast's head while I get down." But Josiah took no notice. Somehow or other, Mrs. Jackson scrambled down, and taking her bonnet off before she moved away, I heard her say, "How could Josiah do it? And it was the height of fashion, that feather was, for Mrs. Jenkins told me she had seen the likes of it on several smart hats in Edgware Road. And just to think, Josiah has ruined the whole thing in a moment of passion." At this point, Ricketts came to fetch Folly, and she promised both Eros and me that she would go on with her story when she came back. Nero, the large Newfoundland dog, had followed Ricketts, and he was just saying a few pleasant words to us when we were startled by a succession of loud, angry barks, followed by a piteous cry. Off rushed Nero in the direction from whence the cries came, and after some moments had elapsed, we saw him coming slowly back, carrying in his mouth by the nape of its neck a poor little terrier dog, which he gently dropped at the feet of Ricketts, and then licked it tenderly all over, wagging his tail the while and asking Ricketts to help. You may be sure that he did not ask in vain, for when we saw Ricketts pick up the poor little fellow and carry him quietly in the direction of the kitchen and cook, and from henceforth the terrier, who was christened Dan, became one of us, and Nero and he were inseparable companions. And more than once I heard them spoken of, dignity and impudence. Little Dan never forgot that big, brave Nero had saved him. Thank you for joining us on tonight's episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians. Allow this soothing music to carry you off to slumber.